Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernan. I created this space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners. Hello, I hope you're all doing well. Before I share a little introduction to this week's episode, I want to thank those of you who have sent me a DM or an email to tell me how excited you are about the change in episodes. I'll be doing 2 episodes a week from January. It's really motivating and I really appreciate that you've taken the time to send me an email or a DM. It's really nice, so thank you. And also those of you who've taken the time to rate the podcast on Spotify and iTunes. It's so nice seeing those ratings go up, and it's really important for the podcast. It helps me gain the podcast, get more exposure, which in turn make sure that all these amazing birth stories are heard by the right audience. So thank you so much for that. I know it's a conscious effort to do it, but it really matters to me and the podcast, and also listeners, because then the people who need to hear your stories get to hear them. And lastly, but certainly not least, those of you who have signed up to Acast Plus, which I will link in the show notes here, basically gives you access to each episode ad-free. And also, it's just a little nod to the podcast to help me keep it afloat, basically, for €5 a month. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. To talk about this week's episode, I share my chat with Ruth, who talks me through her one pregnancy and the birth of her little girl. So Ruth was in 3 different hospitals. She was in a hospital in Japan, in the UK, and then in Ireland. So she found out she was pregnant in Japan. She moved to the UK and then ended up living in Ireland. And so because she went into the Irish system at about 22 weeks, and for some reason she was considered high risk. So she was seen quite a lot. She also got COVID during the final stages, well, the final trimester of her pregnancy as well. So although she would have liked a home birth, but at that stage, if you had COVID throughout your pregnancy, you couldn't have a home birth through the HSE. She was supported by some amazing women throughout both her pregnancy and birth experience. So I will let her. So in this episode, you'll hear the three women that she mentions. And I think it's really, really, I love when I hear that women on their first baby really invest in themselves as well as their partner in the unknown. So it's just a brand new experience. And I think it's a really kind thing to do for yourself, to spend that time researching, speaking to the right people. And also there's financial restrictions. It can be really hard to fork over that money. But if you can, it's definitely something that you should do in preparation for labour and the birth of your baby. So I love this episode. And also remember to have a listen at the very end when Ruth shares another little part of her journey at the breastfeeding aspect of being a mother. So enjoy. I will chat to you next week with a new episode, and I hope you are all well and coping well with all the sickness out there. Chat to you soon. Okay. So, Ruth, you are very welcome to the Ireland Spirit Stories podcast. Delighted to sit down and have this chat with you.
Thank you. Really nice to be here. Good to finally be the person. I think I've listened to so many, so it's nice to be the person who can share mine as well.
Yeah, I'm excited. Do you want to give us a little introduction to you and your family, and then we'll get stuck in?
Yeah. So obviously I'm Ruth. I'm married to Will, who I met when I was living in the UK. And we have one daughter, Evelyn, who is coming up 9 months this month. So yeah, good fun, just the three of us. And we're back living in Dublin now. So
let's talk about conception. Was your pregnancy planned, and how did you find out and feel in those early days?
So it was and it wasn't. We were one of those couples. We were due to get married in 2020. At the time, we were living in Singapore. So our plan was kind of to get married, move back to either Ireland or the UK, and then obviously plan to have a family then. Mm-hmm. COVID obviously had other plans. So our wedding was postponed initially to 2021 and then 2022. So we kind of thought we'd wait and see what happens. And then when we did postpone the second time, we thought, no, let's give it a go. We tried for quite a few months and nothing happened. And then we thought, no, we'll wait till after the wedding again. And then when we, in the meantime, had also planned to leave Singapore and move back to the UK. And it was when I woke up one morning, we were midway through packing to leave. And I wasn't even late. And I knew I had a pregnancy test left from the months of trying. And I just had a really weird feeling. Did a test and instantly it came up positive. Mm-hmm. So it was a really nice surprise. So both yes and no to being planned. But a really nice surprise, obviously.
And sorry, what triggered you to take that test?
Just I had this feeling. Okay. I had no symptoms. I just kind of thought, I've got one test left. I'm not exactly going to pack it up and ship one pregnancy test and bring it back with me to the UK or Ireland. So I'll use it and see. There's no harm. And I think one of the things I always laugh about to this day, I rang my husband, Will, for whatever reason, and told him on the phone because I was so stunned.
That was going to be my next question. How did you share the news?
And I think I just rang him and I was like, I'm pregnant. And yeah, I think he was in work kind of saying like, are you sure? Because I mean, both of us always thought you had to go and like go to a GP and get it confirmed. But I called over there. You have to go straight to a gynecologist. So I called. And she was like, no, if it says you're pregnant, so, you know, once you move back, you can get things started. So we did actually have an early scan there in the end, because I was at the 6 week mark. But yeah, so she kind of just said, no, like there's no, we don't do it that way. We just assume you are pregnant.
So you were coming home with a completely different mindset then to what you had originally planned, I suppose. You were coming home to
a different plan. I had just signed to start a new job. And obviously then that I had to tell them. I did wait until things were kind of very confirmed and a little bit further along. But I had, you know, spent weeks talking with them and signed, and I was all kind of packing up and a few weeks later. And it's not necessarily a position I wanted to put any company in. Obviously you can't plan these things and you can't time them. But yeah, so it was a very different way to come home than knowing I was pregnant and starting this new job and we were moving countries. So a lot of
going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how was that transition then? And when did you start to go to your appointments? And yeah, I suppose.
So we did. We made it slightly more complicated for ourselves. We moved back to the UK initially. We signed a lease for a rental over there. And then my husband decided he would take a job in Ireland. So I started all my appointments. The initial early scan was in Singapore. Then I was with the NHS in the UK for a few weeks. And then I transferred over here. So it was kind of interesting to get a very different perspective from each of them. Yeah. I mean, Singapore, they knew I wasn't going to be there. So they didn't talk about any of the later stage aspects of things. NHS, I was straight into a midwives clinic and it was all very relaxed. And then obviously Ireland, it was straight in. And because I was listed as a kind of a late entry, they put me down as kind of a risk in a consultant clinic for whatever reason. I don't really understand it.
So how many weeks then were you when you came home?
I think I was 22. Okay. So I mean, I had the whole NHS booklet, I had all the Singapore scans, but they almost seemed suspicious of the fact that I was coming in so late, even though it was very easily explained.
And there was no reason for you to be high risk. They weren't monitoring you for anything.
No, there was nothing. Okay. Yeah.
I suppose when you got home at 22 weeks, did you start looking at preparation then? So attending classes, or had you thought about that?
So I'd started before. At the very beginning, and we still laugh about this, when I found out I was pregnant, I thought, I want an epidural from the head down. Like, I don't want to know what's going on. obviously, I'd seen the films, I'd heard the horror stories. I didn't want to know what was going on. And it was actually my sister-in-law. She has two kids. And she said the first she did nothing and it was a horrible experience. And she learned from that and she prepared a lot for her second, which was a much nicer experience. And she recommended I start with the hypnobirthing book and just read it and see. Obviously, I knew nothing about it. So I bought the book and I think I was hooked on that almost instantly. And then another friend of mine had done yoga with, Yoni Hearts Club, Craig Quigley. Mm-hmm. So she recommended I go to that. And obviously there's a really nice chat element with that before and after the class. So again, I got more insight in from that. So by the time I came home, I had those two things kind of behind me. And then we decided that we do the optimal positioning course with Pam Davis as well. And I had hoped for a home birth, so I was looking at that. But then I got COVID at, I think, 29 weeks. And again, that instantly takes you off the HSE scheme. Mm. Although the midwife who I was booked in with, it was Ruth Banks, didn't really understand that either. So once I knew I was, the consultant wouldn't really sign me off for home birth. So at that point, then we decided antenatal classes just so I could know what their policies were and what I was going to be facing into.
You had some amazing people supporting you.
Yeah. They're really, I mean, incredible people.
So do you want to talk us through then your final trimester and the last few weeks of your pregnancy?
Yeah, I suppose because I'd had COVID and it was at that really unknown time, I'd had the booster shot, but they put me on that kind of very accelerated, I don't know how you describe it, but I had blood thinners, I had weekly ECGs, and I had weekly scans to check her because they were being, I think, really, really cautious. They changed all the advice, I think, a week or two after.
Yeah.
Mainly, I think, because they ran out of blood thinning and they realized they could probably screen it out and do some questions. So that kind of tainted us slightly because I'd once a week for a good day, waiting around for every single, you have to wait around, obviously you can't book in for things like the ECG, the trace, the ECG?
Yeah.
So that made it quite difficult. But then obviously doing the yoga, it was good. There was other people in that class who were in similar positions and we were all kind of talking to each other about what we'd heard from different maternity hospitals and we were each getting different advice. So it was a nice way in that to realize I wasn't alone in it, but also to know that, that they were being extra cautious with me and there was no real need for it. It was okay. And the advice was changing all the time and that if you were boosted, it would be fine in the end. So I did try to put it behind me and just focus on building up to the end of it. But the last trimester as well, I think because of COVID, I had pelvic girdle pain before. And they said some physios had seen like that be accelerated by COVID. Okay. So the last few weeks, I couldn't really walk much. I tried to stay as active as I could, but I think the last trimester I found really, really tough.
So when it came to you, you had it was consultant led.
Yeah. So that in itself is another, we're still baffled by this as well. I had wanted to go on the domino scheme and the consultant had signed me off for that because I got COVID, you get instantly transferred back to the consultant scheme.
Okay.
And then I think at 36 weeks allowed me to go back onto the midwife scheme. But then, and this is slightly jumping ahead, when I went in for my 39-week appointment, I had called the day before to say what I thought, where my water is trickling, and the midwife on the phone said no. But when I went in for the 39-week appointment the next day, when I ran into the desk, they said, no, you're back on the consultant scheme, even though I was due to see a midwife. So they did eventually put me back on a midwife scheme, but then when they realized it was my waters, I got transferred. transferred back over again over to the consultant site.
Okay. So who were you able to discuss your birth preferences with? Like, who did you have that conversation with anybody? In the hospital, like, did anyone know
I had it with the consultant. She knew my wish for a home birth, and she was not that she was against it, but she used some phrases that I would never publicly say again because it was a really horrible, she wasn't very nice about it.
Okay.
But I did go through my birth plan with a midwife in one of the appointments when I was on that scheme. And she had taken a copy of everything, and she was really lovely about the whole thing. So she had that on file. But I don't know where. I mean, we gave them in on the day that I was actually in labor. So I couldn't tell you who actually had a copy in the end.
Do you want to talk us through your first signs of labor? Or I suppose actually from, around the 39-week mark is when you started seeing things.
Yeah, so I think it was the Sunday before. So it's 38.5, I think. That was when I thought my waters had started to trickle quite late that night. And that day I'd done what everyone talks about, you know, you start frantically cleaning and preparing and getting things done. And I had had plans to go out with my parents and aunt and uncle that day with my husband as well. And I kind of thought, let's just go. I don't feel anything. And the waters hadn't gone at that stage. But I had a feeling that something was coming. So that night they did go, and I called the coom on the Monday morning, and they said, no, you know, to keep an eye if it increases in quantity or changes in any way, then yeah, do come in, but it doesn't sound like it's your waters. And I had the odd kind of back spasm or like a small back tinge, but nothing too obvious. It wasn't, I could go about my day. I still went to the gym. I went out for coffee and stuff on the Monday. I was in so much denial, I think, that it was coming by Tuesday, that I went to my appointment without my labor bag or anything. And just went in and thought, no, this is fine. It's just an appointment. I'll be home after. But obviously, once they realized it was my waters, I think, as we all know, that they were very risk averse, and they knew the times that things had been leaking for, because it wasn't the big gush that people talk about. So they were very much so. They passed me obviously back to the consultant room. I was with one of the reg doctors who kind of just said, like, not discussing it, just said, we'll send you upstairs, you'll go on the antibiotics, you know, we'll do the test to see if you have strep B, and we'll put you on Syntocin and we'll break your hindwaters. So it was all guns blazing all at once. And then I was on my own, obviously, at this stage. I rang my husband. He came in and we went upstairs, and I said, I don't want to do all these things. You know, I'll take the antibiotics, because I feel they were scaring me into it. Even though I had actually tested negative for it, I didn't want to put me or what was then to be my daughter at risk. But then I did have quite a battle with them. I had different doctors coming in and saying, obviously, your body's not going into labor. Can we break your waters? And I kept saying no, and they kept coming in and giving me different facts. I couldn't even tell you what they were trying to say. But I know one of the Regis, when he left, I said I'd prefer not to speak with him again, and he came back in and apologized, but then kept going of, you're asking for an emergency C-section if you don't agree to us bringing on your labor. So it wasn't, and that was, I think that was the first time my husband had seen the pressure that can be put on women for different things. Obviously, there hasn't been any appointments in Ireland. So we just kept kind of arguing it back. And then we went outside for a walk. So they let me go out between the antibiotic drips. And I actually called Claire Quigley and spoke with her. And she was, I mean, just so, so kind, so helpful, and kind of calmed me down on putting things in perspective and kind of realizing that I did actually have a choice in what was going on. So we went back upstairs after that phone call and chatted with one of the midwives, and my own consultant came in as well at that stage. We said if nothing had happened by, I think it was 4 o'clock, they could then break my waters. But no Syntocin. Okay. So she said that was fine, and they would give me some time then to see what happened. So she checked me before she asked that she checked me actually before they broke my waters, said everything was favorable, it was all looking good. I think I was already maybe 1 centimeter. So she broke my waters, and I think the labor did start pretty quickly after that. Because they obviously, I was straight into a delivery suite then because they've broken my waters.
How were you feeling then? Were you feeling, probably it was because I was going to ask you, did you have anyone to discuss this with support wise? Because that's a lot to take on when you, when you're kind of saying no to what they're advising. And you're, you know, you don't want, you never want to be in a position where you have to have a bit of a fight. You hate to think of anyone going into labor in any sort of situation and not being in like a relaxed state or having to put up any sort of fight. So how did you feel when you were moved on then to into the delivery suite and you were that 3 centimeters and labor was progressing or starting? Did you feel relieved and that, okay, this is happening now, I can settle into this? Or how did you feel?
I think I was excited, but I was also still questioning my own decisions. Because obviously I'm not a medical expert and I don't know everything about what's going on and all the different risks. And obviously they have seen some of the worst case scenarios, but they've also seen the best case scenarios, which they're not really going to tell you about. So I was really, really excited. And I never, I talked about earlier wanting an epidural from the head down, but I went into this in such a different mindset of this is my own experience and I want to make sure this is what I want it to be as much as I can. But I definitely did still question things, and I was lucky in having Will because he'd known and he kind of kept up with my research into different things as I went. Amazing, and my own preferences. So I was lucky is probably, I don't know if it's the right word, but he understood where I was coming from, and he was really good in reassuring me that we were making the right decisions.
And physically, how did you feel? How did the surges feel? Did they feel manageable?
At the beginning, totally manageable. I had a TENS machine at the beginning, and I think I just put on the gentle birth app, and I went into the bathroom for a while on my own. And they gave me a ball, so I was sitting on that for a while, and it was manageable, but everything was in my back. And I think maybe 2 hours into that, another consultant came in. It was a man, and he basically said to me that they weren't real contractions, and that I should start on the syntocin. Even though you could see, because I was obviously on a trace, I was lucky to get the wireless one so I could move around, but you could see that there were contractions. And he said, no, like you need to feel it in your stomach, which obviously, as everyone knows, is not the case. So he kept pushing for the syntocin drip, and we kind of again did argue back and got more time to let things progress more. But ultimately I did end up on syntocin probably an hour later. So they were definitely manageable until that point.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
But once I was on the St. Tyson, and I remember a midwife coming down to me, there was two women in the room at this point, two midwives, and they were about to change shift, and they just put in the St. Tyson, and she said, like, I remember coming down to my eye level and just saying, it's about to get really intense. You know, you can totally do this, but it is going to be intense. And then she changed shift. And I mean, she was right. I don't really remember the, it is pain, but the intensity of it, but the Syntocin, and because it was in my back, I remember it's going down my legs and being totally unbearable at some points. So
did you find you really had to tap into the hypnobirthing? Did you find that effective?
Yeah. And I mean, I had the gas in there as well and the TENS. And I found, because Will had known I wanted to use breathing, every time I went off track, he would kind of say, no, come back in. And the midwife that had come in on the shift change was, again, she had read through all my breath bands and just kind of said, no, you can do this. Remember to breathe. And she would come in every so often if I was starting to kind of go off track and suggest maybe, like, she'd bring over a breathing stool or she'd lay down a mat and say, try something else and, you know, take your mind off and go to a different place. So she was really, really, really helpful.
So, tell me what happened then. Tell me how the next few hours looked for you.
So the Syntocin, I think, went in maybe at 7:30, 7. And a lot of that is blur. I think I heavily used the gas and air. Yeah. Reached the point that it was gone. But I asked them to take out the Syntocin a few hours, I think maybe 11.
Yeah.
Because I was clearly in established labour. I didn't need it anymore. And I was progressing. And I had said, I still laugh at this, that I didn't want any internal exams, and I was adamant about it. But I think because I was losing kind of power and being able to stand on my legs, I then was almost begging for one, because in my head, I kept saying, if I know how far I am, I know how long is left, even though, again, it's not the case.
I know. I was the same with Oliver. I was like, why can't you check me every 5 minutes? I need to know.
I know, I kept being like, no, if she checks me, it couldn't be an hour left and I can totally do an hour.
Yeah.
It's a poor woman. And she kept saying, like, if I check you, I can tell you, but it's not going to change how long this process is. So it was it was really, really intense. But once they took out the Syntocin, I was a bit more free then, because I didn't have the drip attached. I still had to go back every 4 hours for the strep B antibiotic. But I think then I transitioned at about 1 a.m.
Tell me how you know that. How did you feel?
I don't actually know. I think I did say some things, like, I don't want a family anymore, or, can I go home now? Like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Finished. But I don't think there was, apart from what I said, there wasn't too much of, like, a mental change in me. I don't know.
Okay.
Like, Will said he wouldn't have known, because I was kind of making, I think because of the high on the gas and air, I was making some jokes as I went anyway. But I had felt the urge to kind of bear down before that. And I thought I transitioned earlier, and obviously I hadn't. But because it was all back labor, she said, you're going to feel it. You know, just go with what your body wants you to do. But the midwife, again, she knew all the preferences when I got to the stage of pushing. And she was very gentle about it, because when I did reach the stage, she said, oh, you should maybe lean over the back of the bed on your knees. And I think obviously at that point, then I thought, okay, she knows that it's imminent.
Yeah.
And Will still laughs about this. I don't think he quite realized how fast it could be from that stage. To him, it felt like seconds. Because then suddenly we had a baby. Obviously for me, it wasn't seconds. It was a long time. I think I was pushing for maybe 40 minutes or 45 minutes. So,
okay.
But yeah, we didn't know what we were having. And because it was just us and this midwife in the room, she was so just, she let us just be. And even when it came to managing the actual delivery, she had the warm compress, but she was just kind of just a silent support. And just said, go with what your body wants you to do.
And did you feel your body doing what it wanted to do naturally? Did you feel that?
Yeah. Like there was nothing, I had no control of what my body was doing. It was just doing what it needed to do. And I just went with it. And there's nothing you can do once you're in that position. You have to just, and it's the best thing for us, is just to let it go.
And do you feel the hypnobirthing kind of enabled you to do that? To just not feel, did you feel fear?
No. And that's one of the things I think that I have friends who are getting pregnant now, that obviously everyone has their own journey, but I do say that I went in really fearful and I came out of this a totally different mindset on what labor could be. Yeah. I think for hypnobirthing, it's not necessarily just the breathing. It's actually like, we're not taught the mechanics of labor or pregnancy or anything growing up. So then you get pregnant and you kind of think, oh my God, I have to push a baby. I was like, how am I going to do this? But once you, like, I listen to so many birth stories, which is why I really like, it's really nice to be able to share mine, because it helped so much in realizing that it's something women do every day and it's it's fine. It's not something I do every day, but it's fine once you get to it.
So when you gave birth to her, did she come up through your legs and onto your chest?
Yeah, I think because we didn't know what she was, we both kind of looked down and we knew that if it was a girl, people have said you might struggle to realize it's a girl.
Yes.
Which we definitely did. But then she was put straight on my chest. I was turned around, obviously. She was put straight up and we had all the kind of delay cord clamping, everything. She was, again, just left. It was still just the one midwife with us. And the placenta was all, it was left. I didn't have any managed delivery of that. So that was another nice part of it. But again, it was just really relaxed. But once the cord was cut, I wanted to breastfeed. So she was put up, she managed to crawl her way up. And unfortunately, she actually went blue twice.
Okay.
So the emergency button was called. So at that point, we did have the room filled with, I think, like 20 people came in. So that obviously was quite scary. And the first time, obviously, it happened, like we could see her still. She was just over to our my left, I think. And they had the mask there, but I don't think they had to use it. They were just rubbing her. But they put her back on then to try and get her to feed again. And she went blue again. I mean, there's nothing obviously in my notes because she was then listed as a separate human. But we think it's just because the latch wasn't good. And this part, I think this is one of my biggest, I can't regret it, but it's the part I kind of don't want to think about too much. Rather than trying to address the latch, a consultant just gave her a bottle. And that was her first feed, which I find really hard to think about. But obviously, because she'd gone blue and I didn't know why I would have done anything at the time. But the midwife said, I did the reflections call and she did say it was probably due to the latch and that someone should have come in and just helped her latch properly and put her back on my skin. But instead they got her dressed because they thought that she was cold. So that, I think, because I don't really know what happened, I find that whole part of it a little bit hard to process.
And they don't have a cause apart from the latch, that they just have it down to that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So when you got her back into your arms, was it, how long was the time scale there?
I'm not sure, because that consultant, she did the whole feed. Like, she didn't even give us the bottle. Which I don't understand why she did that. If she needed a bottle feed, one of us could have done it. So I'm not entirely sure.
So when you did get her back into your arms, how did you feel then?
I mean, just at the time, relieved she was okay and just happy. I had had a second degree tear, so I had been obviously stitched up and I was ready to go with her. And I think they did give us then more time, maybe because of what had happened, I'm not sure. But it was just nice then to just have her. And because the room had been so full, everyone had left then. It was back to just being, I think they gave the three of us just some time then to kind of relax back into things.
Yeah, and let that just feeling flow through your body again, because I'm sure it was interrupted for a short time. Yeah. So when you went back down to the labour ward then, how did you feel? Did you, you know, you're there with a new baby. How did you feel?
I think the same that everyone feels. You kind of think, oh my God.
So when's everyone coming to help me?
They just leave you. I think I ended up having to get an anti-sickness injection on the ward. I didn't feel that great. But because I had her, I think I had her at 2:30 in the morning. And we weren't on the labour or the ward until maybe 7:30. So my husband didn't have to go home. He was allowed to stay then, obviously, for the day.
Oh, great, yeah.
So it meant I did send him home to have a sleep and a shower. But it meant I wasn't fully alone then that day. But obviously, because I wanted to try and breastfeed and wasn't getting off the best start, there really isn't the support in there to help you. So, I mean, you are clueless. I didn't know what I was doing. I think I've heard other people say this, that student midwives are the most helpful, and the more kind of mature midwives tend to just get the baby's hungry, give them a bottle and move on. So that was definitely the experience I had. But I think the COVID restrictions of no visitors apart from partners, I think that's something that should stay, because I found the ward was so calm. Apart from partners, it was just women and newborns, and all of us kind of laughing at one baby would cry and the next would start to cry, and people didn't know what they were doing and everyone was trying to figure it out. So it was nice in that sense to just have a bit of calm.
And how did you feel in terms of your levels of anxiety with your daughter sleeping? Were you watching her a lot considering what happened?
Yeah, and I think I did. Yeah. I woke up maybe, I don't know, definitely twice, if not more, in a panic that she wasn't breathing. And she kind of jumped straight over. She was swaddled up and she was in beside me and I'd been asleep as well. But there was, I was really, really paranoid that she wasn't breathing.
And how did your breastfeeding journey go?
It's mixed. Like, I'm combination feeding now, but I've never really got to the point where I could exclusively breastfeed, because they were constantly topping her up. And I was trying to breastfeed, and she doesn't have a huge appetite. She eats a lot of food, but she's always been a grazer. So the public health nurse and like at home was kind of on about her weight, et cetera, as well. So they were always advocating for top-ups rather than ever trying to kind of look at her latch or anything else. And it took quite a few weeks, if not months, for me to point out, because she has a really strong lip tie.
Yeah, Eva does too, yeah.
And I think that possibly is also part of the latch, but once they did acknowledge it was there, they kind of said, we don't really know what to do. So, it's up to you to go and find a pediatric dentist, was all they suggested. So breastfeeding, it has gone as well as it can, considering. And I'm due to go back to work next month, so I have started to introduce more bottles. But I do want to keep up kind of for as long as I can, even if it's just morning feed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. She, as every child this winter, she's been on and off with different viruses. So she's kind of sometimes taken easy to a bottle, and then sometimes she'll come back to me.
How did you recover physically after your stitches? How did you feel?
It's probably the part that I thought least about, I think, as everyone does. And I remember going for, I think, the first few walks. We live beside a park, and just thinking, oh my God, how can I not walk around a park, slowly? I found that really frustrating, because I had gone from being quite active, and I was obviously in the gym the day before I had her, to not being able to do anything. But other friends of mine who have babies just said, just get through the first 6 weeks and you'll notice a huge change in how you feel physically. And it will improve. So I think it was just a case of being really patient. And I booked in with Women's Health Dublin. So So I knew that, kind of working towards that point where I knew I was going to be checked and she would either say, wait another while, or you can get back to doing more activity. But I think within the first 2 weeks, there's a big change in how you feel. And then it's just a bit more gradual after that.
Yeah, it can be really shocking because that's not something that we obviously think about, especially first time around, those early weeks. And you mentioned your birth reflections. So did you find them beneficial? And what was the reason, can I ask, that you decided to go ahead with the birth reflection services?
I wanted to go ahead because I'd kind of had those, not arguments, but debate different doctors along the way. Just to see, kind of, I want to know my notes and what they would think of from the other side of someone saying no to different issues. Obviously, also to see if they had any more information on why she went blue. Mm-hmm. But I found it was really, really helpful. I found it a little bit like when we started the call, one of the first things she said to me was, you know, you're one of the minority and congratulations on pushing your baby out, because I think there are so many C-sections for first time mums. Which is like, it's a strange way to open a call.
Yeah.
And it's a sad truth that I am, but she, you know, one of their minority. But she was really, really useful. I mean, she was quite disappointed in the lack of breastfeeding support and the latch issue that potentially causes blue episode. And her view is kind of that, you know, she said it's not necessarily a complaint, but to the more people that can make complaints about this type of thing, they will change it, because until then, no one is going to do anything. And so I think that was probably the biggest thing that we focused on in the call. And I think the other thing that she talked about was the way they had delivered different information to me, and kind of, and I've heard a lot of people on different stories that you share talk about this, that information is delivered as, this is what will happen next, not can we discuss what will happen next. And you know, telling me things like it's going to end up in an emergency section is not the way to talk to someone who is in early labor. So again, she basically asked, would I submit complaints on both of those, because the more people that do it, the better for them.
Thank you so much. That was lovely.
Thank you so much. No, thank you. It's so nice. I still listen to them now. So it's so nice to, I was talking to Will before this, and he kind of said, it's nice you listen to so many. And even on the day I was in labor, I think I was listening, Pam's, I think I'd come out that day.
Oh, yeah, cool.
I was listening to that morning. So it is, you know, in any way that anyone's story can help. I think you pick up pieces of information from stories as you go.
Yeah, absolutely. In the introduction of this episode, I mentioned that Ruth sent me on a piece via WhatsApp, a little audio piece, which I have included just after this. And it's surrounding breastfeeding. So the support that she didn't necessarily have in the hospital, we all know they're so busy in the hospital. Lactation consultants are spread really thinly. They can't see everybody. And she was waiting quite a while to hear back from the hospital, a long time, actually. And so she could speak to a lactation consultant, and we know that's a luxury in this day and age when everything costs so much money. So what came into my head was, instead of family and friends buying the baby grows and, you know, really close friends buying all those little bits and pieces, another way that you could maybe ask them to help out is throw a few bob in your Revolut, have a kitty of, I don't know, postnatal classes that you want to attend, and instead of going and spending 20, 30, 40 euro on bits and pieces that baby will obviously look gorgeous in, maybe we should have those little vaults in our Revolut that we use as ways that people can pitch in a couple of bob for the postnatal care. So anyway, that was just in my head. Thanks, Ruth, for sending that in. I think it's important to hear, and as I said earlier, I'll chat to you all next week.
It's just really to add that with breastfeeding, and I was kind of thinking more about my journey in recent weeks, that when I was discharged, we looked at my notes when I got home, and it said that I was exclusively breastfeeding. And this was in spite of the fact that they were pushing top-ups, and I mean, they were giving top-ups when I was sleeping with my consent. But I think that was partly down to me not knowing kind of how breastfeeding worked, and that those first few days and weeks are so intense in babies kind of putting in their orders for more milk. And even though it said I was supposed to be breastfeeding with the bottles, there was also a referral in those discharge notes for me to be seen by a lactation consultant in the hospital. But I think by day 3 or 4, when we were at home, and obviously that's when everyone hits that hormone drop, and you know, I kind of felt that things weren't going very well, and I was, you know, near wanting to give up breastfeeding, that we decided we'd get someone in because we hadn't heard from the hospital yet. So we got a friend of a friend, she's a midwife, and she had just completed lactation consultant training, and she came over, and I think within 5 minutes of her being in the house with us, of showing us a really simple way to get Evelyn to latch properly, that almost instantly took away the pain that I was experiencing with breastfeeding, which I now know isn't normal, but also gave me the confidence to keep going with it. And I think without that, I would have given up at that stage. And I think I say that because probably 10 days after that, that's when I got the call from the lactation consultant in the hospital, and she said she'd be following up on the recommendation that I come in, and was I still breastfeeding, was the first question. And obviously I said yes, and she said, you know, how's everything going? And I said, well, fine, but only because I got the private lactation consultant. And I know that I'm in a really fortunate position to be able to have someone out to help me with that. But I mean, you're kind of, when you're pregnant, you're surrounded by signs, and when you have a baby, saying breast is best. But it really did highlight to me that, you know, if you want this to work, yes, you can do preparation, which, you know, I, in my own, kind of admitting myself, I didn't really appreciate how difficult breastfeeding can be. I know it's comes to some naturally, and it really didn't for me. But it is down to preparation, and just having someone say, like that private lactation consultant telling me that I could do this and I was doing amazing, that was enough. With the simple kind of the teachings on a latch, that was enough to give me the confidence to keep going. And I think without that, had I waited for the hospital consultants to get back to me, I wouldn't be in the position where I'm still combination feeding now. That would have been the end of my breastfeeding journey, because I know myself, I wouldn't have been able to keep going. So I think just, it's something I'll kind of carry with me if I do get lucky enough to be pregnant again. You know, breastfeeding is an incredibly challenging journey, but it's so worthwhile if you can persevere with it, and if you do have the support around you to help with it. So that was just something to add on kind of, you know, the question of how my breastfeeding journey is going.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.